Pochi, pochi.
About you, folks. We have a full house today. Hello.
Hello. Yo.
How's it going, everybody? All right. The intro music you just heard, which is composed and played by Ara Dabanjan, is joining us today.
And Coco Sarafian.
And Coco Sarafian. KG. We know him KG. As KG here. He does our mastering, so special thank you to him every time. How's it going, Esteban?
Good, man. How about you?
Cool. I'm very excited. This is the first time we have four people, two guests, and
foursome.
Yeah, as we do on special occasions. So this podcast is pretty special. I have my uncle Ara Dabanjan joining, as well as Aran Emirzian. And we are celebrating their debut album, Papak. So welcome, guys.
Hey,
yo.
So,
what's up?
We've stripped you of instruments for now, but we're gonna dive in more into the origins and the intent and the evolution of what has happened with your guys' collaboration, where it started, where it ended, and all that. To get off the bat, you guys have a debut album coming up, and you guys are celebrating it, kicking it off with a show on this Sunday, right? Mm-hmm. The 28th at Barnsdall Theater in Hollywood. So we'll put up the information on the website and all that. But Arakere, you've been a busy guy. You just released another album with Element Band,
mm-hmm.
And then, for our non-Armenian listeners and all that means...
Means existence.
So it's the letter E, but it stands, it represents, right?
Yeah, Armenian is one of those languages. I think there are a few, not many, but a few that have letters that are actually a word. So the letter E in Armenian is an actual word, meaning a being or existence.
But that's with the accent mark, or
yeah,
that's also in Portuguese, for example.
Oh, so
yeah,
there
it's
you
to
go.
Be.
So there you go.
Me.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
Wow. Wow, that's crazy.
Yeah.
Yep. That's exactly what it is.
I'm finding out more recently. There's like so many connections about like these, you know, similarities between these languages.
I didn't know that about Portuguese.
Yeah.
But yeah, I named it as some of you know, the Element Band albums have always been named by the letters of alphabet of the Armenian alphabet. So the first one being Yevofe, those were a couple of letters that were added later to the Armenian alphabet to be able to pronounce certain words and have the Western sound. So we basically borrowed it from Western languages. We didn't have that in the Armenian alphabet. So the first album was called Yevofe, and the second album was called U, which means and we did that because it was Armenian and non-Armenian songs. And this one's called E because, you know, throughout the years, it's been almost 12 years of Element Band being around. And as some of you know, it's quite a challenge to keep a group together, a band together. So we're still in existence. So E was very, very appropriate.
How would you describe the transformation after 12 years? Like in your music and what you're putting out?
I think it's evolved in many ways. I've evolved in many ways. I don't think you have a choice in any art form when you keep doing what you're doing to try more, to take on bigger challenges. Compared to the first album, I feel like I'm a lot more aware of what I'm doing. So I'm sure I'll feel the same way in another 10 years, but right now, this album, I believe, is the best work I've done so far. So
it complements, and like we'll get back to this a little bit more, but this complements it in an interesting way because of what I want to talk about a little bit more, which is like the intent behind the route you've taken to produce music. And to get there, we're going to have to bring like Auden in to kind of explain how the project of your collaboration and the album Papa kind of came into existence. So Auden, you're from Germany, right?
Yeah.
Okay, but are you half Armenian, half German, or you're just Armenian?
I'm Armenian. My father is Armenian. My mother is Armenian. They were born in Istanbul, and then they moved to Frankfurt, and I was born in Frankfurt.
Okay.
So I'm Armenian, but living in Germany.
So you're like me. Yeah. I was born in America, but I'm Armenian.
Yeah, but you have a different surrounding, because in Germany there are just a few Armenians.
Yeah.
And over here you have the opportunity to be in the Armenian school and learn the language, be in the environment of a lot of Armenians, and we don't have that in Germany. Our environment is very German and Turkish.
And like Frankfurt, I've been to Frankfurt once and I absolutely hated it. It was like a horrible experience. As soon as I got off the train, there was like this homeless man doing like a line of coke off a newspaper. I know that's a train station, you know. This is my
and
BS,
Frankfurt is popular for it.
Really? Yeah. And I went to I've been to Berlin and it's way more of a metropolis, I guess, and like a mix and a vessel of mixed cultures and whatnot. Yeah. But like Frankfurt was like, I get what you're saying. It was like Germans and kind of some other people around, but it's mostly Germans. And it felt very intimidated, you know, like going to a bar and like have this giant German woman like try to serve me beer. But it was very strange. So you grew up there. And like we're very fortunate because we have so many cultures around us and we can pick and choose, you know, and one of the options is our own, you know, the Armenians. Yeah. So you're born there and then what?
And then you have to constantly explain yourself why you're doing that, why you're doing this, and why you look different. So you have to adjust. And if you don't adjust to that environment, it's kind of tiring because you always feel like an outsider. Because there are not many, first of all, not many Armenians. And the second, there are not many tolerant Germans. Germans are very like stiff.
So in order to like hold on to your like ethnicity per se, like was the route you took like always music?
Always, yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah. Always.
So has that been your like your career?
Yes.
Yeah.
So I was a musician from the top. Like with 18, I started doing music. I went to school until I was 18. Tried to start studying philosophy. But then the music was so overwhelming and took so much time that I just took the route of being a musician.
And you went the rock route?
Yeah. First of all, the rock route for sure.
Yeah.
I like very heavy stuff. I'm a child of the 90s and or end of 80s where metal was very big, so I was just buying metal albums and then I listened to Black Sabbath. And because of Tony Iommi, the guitar player, mm-hmm. I started playing the guitar. And I forced two friends to play instruments too, so we can
the German play. Way. I'm gonna force you to do this.
Yeah, you do it.
Put this in your hand.
Yeah. And then the problem was that the bass player he wanted to play guitar, and then I told him, "No, you're not a guitar player." And I said, "Why?" And I showed him that his fingers are twice as big as mine. And the bass strings are also...
That's finger discrimination, man. Come on.
Finger.
No.
I've seen people with like chubby, stubby fingers. Okay, let me ask you. There are stubby fingered individuals that play flamenco pretty damn well, right?
Not only that.
Yeah.
Forget guitar. How about violin? I'll give you an example. Itzhak Perlman.
Mm-hmm.
Have you seen him play the violin?
His chubby fingers,
and that little, you know, nick that violins have.
Yeah,
fretless. So of course it's. I mean, yeah, I don't mean to contradict.
There's also Django Reinhardt.
Yeah, there's also Django Reinhardt, who had three fingers.
Yeah.
Well, that's why he developed a certain way of playing, right? That no one else could replicate. Right.
But you know, I'm Armenian, and we have to convince someone. Yeah. You know, we are selling. We're constantly selling, so... You know, this was the right opportunity to tell him
so
to play bass.
So you throw him on bass, you create your little rock band, and then what? And then what happens?
We created a rock band, and then we wrote songs and songs. We created our own style, and we called our band Harmful. And I had also a German metal band, which we started with Rammstein, which now is a very big band, but in that period... There were a couple of bands who were doing metal and singing German, and Rinderwahnsinn, which is Mad Cow Disease when you translate it.
Okay.
So, and the name was Program. It was very weird and very noisy. It's very brutal. And
I can imagine like the poster reading like Harmful Cow Disease.
Yeah. So I had two bands. I was very protective. So I did one album with Harmful, then one album with Rinderwahnsinn, Harmful, Rinderwahnsinn, and then...
So was Harmful pretty successful?
No, let's say put it that way. Commercially, we were not successful, but we did 9 records on 5 major labels. So we always had people who believed in us. Yeah. We worked with very good producers, very good musicians, and we were appreciated by a lot of bands who were very successful, producers who were very successful. Faith No More, for example, was... A member of Faith No More joined Harmful for 2 years.
Okay.
And so it was, we were not commercially successful because we were very stubborn and not compatible with the rest
you
of the music.
You kept like shilling away chubby fingered individuals, that's why.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, yeah, kind of. Yeah.
But that was the
problem was our, okay, now I can say it. Our drummer was the main actor in a porn movie. And this was.
Excuse me?
And this was the big problem.
The truth comes out, finally. Yeah, as is the case as usual. You know, drummers are always fucking around.
No, but we existed 20 years.
Damn,
20
years. Well, yeah, you're talking about 9 albums on major level.
So do you have like a cult following now?
Yeah, for sure. And people are waiting for
us. Do they recognize you on the street like, hey, man,
No, it's not because we're not.
You're not that commercial.
We're not the pop. You know, we're very underground. But in that underground scene, we played 800 shows. You know, you can't play 800 shows if you have no following.
Yeah, it's intense
because everyone would lose money.
Yeah. Were you the only Armenian German member of the band?
Yeah, we had another Greek and a German, so we were a trio.
Oh, it was a trio.
And. Are you that Harmful? You're singing in English,
yeah.
And then your heavy metal, the Cow Disease band, you're singing in German,
yeah.
And then how did that succeed?
No, the German was kind of the German band was kind of successful, but I lost interest after the 4th album. There was nothing new I could express with that band, and Harmful became more successful, especially from the record company side. So I. Continued with Harmful, and we got very melodic. You know, when you do 9 records, you can't just do the same record over again.
Okay, so like two powerful musicians on other opposite sides of the world. Like, how does it happen that you guys end up meeting to collaborate, and you're going from heavy metal to an album composed of Armenian music?
You know, with Harmful and Rinderwahnsinn, I did a couple of albums, like 14 albums. But then when my father died, I discovered my love for acoustic music. So I took the acoustic guitar and started also to discover what my father liked. And like this, I discovered Armenian music, acoustic music, and tried to express myself in a mellow way, very chilled and songwriting oriented without noise. So it like this, I wrote songs with Emirzian. I discovered my love for quiet music and also my love for the Armenian language and trying to be a better Armenian musician, yeah, and find my culture and discover my roots.
Yeah.
And then one day I came to Los Angeles, and I met Ara, and we hooked up.
Yeah, you did.
Not in that sense.
Yeah,
but well, there was another person in play. We did meet through friends, but the way, I guess, to get to the point, the way this project came up, yeah, is there was a dear friend of us, ours, Parser Topcan, who Aren had met, and actually both of us being at the same party at Parser's house, eventually they got into a discussion about Armenian poetry and then compositions and music. So Aren and he discussed putting Armenian music, original Armenian music that Aren had composed, to Western Armenian poetry. So Parser was one of those individuals that was very much worried about the Armenian, the Western Armenian dialect and language being lost eventually. So how to keep these poems and these poets alive. And this was one very clever way of doing it. So they did that, and then they came over, decided to come over and involve me in the project. So as soon as they came, it was magical. It just took off. We meshed. As you know, in music, you either have chemistry or you don't. And we immediately did. And from then, we moved forward, and we had all the plans, and the three of us to keep going. Aren went back to Germany, and unfortunately, Parser passed. And we talked, and we decided that we needed to continue this project, and it was important enough. Not just as a whole, it had great purpose, but also in his spirit.
It's very interesting because you have this desire to protect these certain, not just the artists and the poets, but the culture and the expression that exists within the culture. And like so many different aspects and variables came together to create this. So from my understanding, and I listened to the album, you have the lyrics that were originally poems, right? And how old are the poems, tracing back to?
Most of the ones we've done are about,
100 years?
Yeah, about 100 years old, yeah. Roughly. Yeah, some a little more, some a little less.
Which is fairly new when you're discussing it and putting it into context with the Armenian culture.
Right.
Yeah. So, but then a poem is a poem. It doesn't follow the structure that lyrics follow in music.
Yeah.
Right?
But Parser, when he chose the poems, he tried to choose the contemporary ones where he could also imagine that we could use them as song lyrics.
So he foresaw them being used and, you know.
Yeah.
He did. He did select. You know, he was selective about that based on what Aren said. But I'll add this. Aren has a special talent in taking the poems and rearranging certain things, certain sentences. Because when it comes to music, as you know, there's a part A, there's a part B, there's a part C, or there's a chorus and whatnot. And what to use where. And where, what to repeat, what not to repeat, and you know, you kind of have to screen it out.
It's like an adaptation,
of
the poem. Yeah,
it's so interesting because, like, you guys are listening, right? And when you meet Aren and come to hug him, like when he stands up, like his body just continues and like it towers like over me. You know, I'm a short individual. And I can imagine you, I can depict you like singing this like German heavy metal, you know? Mm-hmm. But then you're like, I'm getting the story behind it where you're discussing like, okay, you found this, you know, side of you where it's introduced to acoustic music and you're, you know, falling into your roots. So you listen to the album and, you know, my first, you know, take on it was, you know, the way I described it was like merm. Which, like in Armenian, I guess like translation would be soft, you know. But it's like it's not soft. It's soft in a way that it still possesses some power, you know? How would you translate it?
Delicate.
Delicate. Yes, but in a powerful way, you know? So, and you guys are both singing, and Araketa, you play, you know, 300,000 different types of instruments, from keys to strings, whatever it's dressed with. But you're singing on the album as well, right?
Yeah, it's the first time I'm singing.
Yeah,
I never heard you
and
sing.
And I never thought I would.
Yeah.
I never thought I would.
Yeah, as if you needed more to do, you know? So, but it works out, you know?
I
so
want
to like,
do all of
it. Yeah. Give it to me, yeah. It's like an octopus, like, reaching instruments with all its tentacles. But it works out, and it's like this merm, like, I guess delicate is a perfect translation, but it's beautiful, you know? And the poetry is beautiful, and I wouldn't suspect that these came from different sources, in a way, you know? It's very interesting.
Yeah, it melts together. Yeah,
but they did.
Yeah.
Yeah, but there is no other way that it would work, right? It either meshes or it doesn't.
It is one of those things. It came together. I mean, Arjen should also like mention how he kind of fell into it. He was actually, I remember him telling me, he was actually imagining this song going, hey, and funny enough, here, you tell this story, Arjen.
Yeah, no, because when we were at that party Ara was talking about, I gave Parzeh an Amusan CD, and I told him, listen, when I do music, it's very Western, and I try people to understand Armenian music and feel Armenian music without having to click into Oriental music
in a traditional sense.
Yeah, traditional sense. Yeah. So, and I gave him the CD, and he listened to it, and he liked it very much. And he said, "It's exactly what we need. So continue and write new music. Write new music." And I said, "Yeah, I would love to write music, new music, but I can't write lyrics." Yeah. So he said, "You know what? Don't worry." And he chose like 20 poems, and he worked so much, like. It was an effort. He was very picky about everything and the spelling. So it's authentic. Yeah. When I sing it, so I went home to Germany, and then he was sending me one poem after the other, and I felt like, oh gosh, I gotta do something. And there was 1 month, 2 months passing, nothing happened. And then one day I was like, okay, I got to try something. And I had this melody. And I knew it would start with hey. You know, hey, boom. And then I just looked up the poems. And there was exactly a song starting with hey. Can you imagine?
An
Armenian song. And I was like, what? That's crazy. I can't believe it. So I tried to
adapt, yeah.
If it works, and it worked perfectly, and that was the beginning. So hey Baronel, hey Baronel, that's how the song starts, and that was also the first song I wrote for that album. But
it's
not on the album, it will be on the second one.
Yeah,
so but it was the beginning. It was very important. So Hey Baronel was very important.
Are you going to release an album in Germany?
Yeah.
Yeah.
We're going to release it.
In November?
21st of October.
October.
Yeah, it's going to be released
so
there.
I was saying in the beginning there, I see such a kind of mirror and the projects that you are working together and what Ara, you've done with like Element Band. But there is this strive, and this exists, I feel like, in every, you know, subject, study, art, and culture, is this, you know, strive to survive, and what you're going to do to survive. And if you don't find it important, or if a small group of individuals don't find it important, then, you know, the flame will die out. So if this connection and this random chance that this hey song and your music and the lyric didn't click, like, you know, the project, even though one individual wanted to aspire to establish, you know, this new like art and like blast it so some, you know, the public can hear it, it would have just died out. But it just works out for some way. But like, it's, is it important to continue this? And obviously the answer is yes, but everyone's doing it in a different form. But it has to be, my point is that it has to be somewhat of a collaboration of joining two kind of art forms that align together, or two different elements that align together, but I feel like it's always mixing and matching puzzle pieces now to ensure that a culture and an idea, a subject, whatever it is going to persist and continue.
Well, generally speaking, you always have, you know, people trying to methodically do things. Let's say preserving something. Organizations, small cultures such as ours. There's always organizations being formed, committees being formed to preserve this or preserve that or do this or do that. You always hear that, especially in our small community. But most of it, you know, unless there's a lot of financial backing, most of those at one point or another have failed or faded away. Or even if they haven't, they haven't really come to fruition that much. The reason this works is because it's very intuitive. Because everything just meshed, everything clicked, everything fell into place. We come from two different, very different worlds. And we're, although very much alike, but very, very different personalities as well. He's harmful. I'm element man. So imagine the difference. So
this,
yeah, like he's headbanging music. That's his background. Even though found acoustic music and Armenian music and whatnot, but still, you have that background, that personality, meshing with this personality.
But I mean, you do have the music in common, albeit.
Yes.
You know.
That's the
those two
ground.
Forms yeah. being different though, but same like language, right?
You're talking about North and South Pole difference in music. Yes, we are musicians, and yes, obviously, a musician is a musician at heart. Absolutely, you're right. However, the type of environment that I come from is extremely different than the type of environment. You know, he was probably carried, off stage and whatnot, where mine is very, very different. And I come from an acoustic world as a beginning.
And how was the process of recording and getting together and like the...
That's an interesting question, because this was also a first for me, because we recorded...
Through Skype?
Right here.
No, where we're sitting.
Right here. Yeah. We recorded right in the middle of this living room. Actually, the dining room right there, and with four mics, and I think we mentioned this in the album, in the text, that listening to this album would not be any different than listening to us live, because we basically recorded the album live in this living room.
And how long did it take?
10 days.
10 days.
That's pretty impressive.
Yeah, 10 days. The interesting thing was...
We were writing also.
Yeah.
10 days and we were writing.
24/7.
Yeah. Very intense.
Very intense.
Very intense, but it was a very new experience for me as well, because I've always tracked my recordings, and this wasn't the same.
Yeah. And as musicians, there's so much work putting together an album, writing, recording, editing. What is it? Aspect you like the most, like, or you enjoy the most, this, you know, like the work behind the scenes before the album comes out, or is it just having the album and having your audience listen to it, enjoying it? Like, what do you
I'll
enjoy
go
the most?
And then you go. I personally enjoy performing. I enjoy recording, but the actual playing and the performance part of my career is the most enjoyable part for me. Everything else is less enjoyable.
For me, it was always like that studio. It's like struggling, and when you go through it and you succeed in finishing an album, you get the reward. And the reward is being on stage and just get out there and just blast it. Yeah. And that was very important for me also. Just, it's a reward. You can just let go. And in the studio, it's always, the process is always tiring because they're, because it's forever. Whatever you record, it will stay there forever. Yeah. And that's the reason the pressure is very high.
And I think that's what's cool. Now we have, you know, something of substance that can be passed on. Whereas I don't know if I would have ever come into contact with any of these poems that were written.
Yeah.
Right?
That's a very good point.
Like, I would have never heard it. Yeah. And the connection that you've applied it and you sewed it to, you know, these songs and made it lyrical, it's now something that is easily transferable, you know? And that's something I've always, how I've perceived what you've done out of with Element, is that these songs, so you were talking about, okay, there's always these organizations and clubs out and whatnot that are established to continue something, be it a religion or a culture or a tradition, whatever it is, you know? But the way I think of that is like about how certain sects of science work, you know? There are people out there who really, really care about, you know, differences in like tortoises, you know? Like their life is based on like, hey, I'm researching this tortoise and this is one species and that's one species and they're
tortoise
having...
Tortoise is very important.
You know?
Please
but
don't,
I just listened to an amazing podcast about like Galapagos Island and like the tortoises. But people have like sitting and having conferences and having main discussions about like tortoises, you know? But like, I don't give a fuck, right? I really don't.
How dare you?
I know, but I don't. But then when someone tells me about it, hey, this is cool and I actually care about it, you know? So in the same sense, I wasn't going to listen. It has to be presented in a positive manner. So if I listen to a podcast that's talking about tortoises, oh, all of a sudden I'm interested, you know? So these songs that, or these organizations, whatever it is, that have just try to attempt to continue something in the same manner over and over again, just are repetitive and redundant, right? It loses its value and loses its spark. But then you add a different element to it and you give a different life and a different form for it. And it still has all the aspects, it has all the characteristics and all the culture and traditions and everything embedded in it, but you're giving and breathing new life into it. So like what you've done with your music, like it's taken old traditional Armenian songs, broken down the structure of it, and then added elements of, you know, Spanish, Greek, you know, French, like whatever it is, you know? So it gives a different style, which now you can, you know, perform it or record it and hand it out. And all of a sudden, hey, I'm attracted to this. I can listen to it. And that song is continuing on.
The idea is how to transcend this stuff to new generations, to the newer generation. What can they relate to? You know, that was the work with Element Band, is no one's going to be able to relate to. No one wanted to listen to all the old stuff. And some of the stuff that we, you know, that I collected and recorded is stuff that people wouldn't touch. It's just very stale. You know,
and it's been done the same, and it hasn't been reproduced, it's been the same way. So it's like, what's the point?
Right, exactly. So there was obviously, luckily, something that you know, kids saw very palatable to their ears. So that was the idea, and even non-Armenians, I'm happy to say. And same applies for this work that we're doing, is the poetry. Like you said, no one, let alone you guys, would ever be interested in reading any of this stuff.
Or know that it existed.
Or know that it existed. So this opens that, you know, that road.
But are these like very obscure poets, or are they fairly known within
they're fairly
the
known.
Literary tradition of Armenia?
No, they're fairly known. Yeah, the names people know. But what happens is, like, let's say...
Because I'm kind of like thinking of, I don't know, like a Bob Dylan performing like in a T.S. Eliot, like, mm-hmm. poem, you know? Would yeah. that be that kind of similar, like,
here's the thing approach? With Western, this being specifically a Western Armenian
yeah.
project, it's more obviously known by Western Armenians or diasporan Armenians,
yeah.
As opposed to people who were born and lived in Armenia. I'm not saying they don't, a lot of them do, but it's more well known on the outside. And the other part that plays a danger in losing these eventually is that the language itself is being used less than it was before.
Yeah. I mean, it's poetry too, and people don't read poetry. I mean, people don't read it unless...
Absolutely.
Poetry.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Unless you're really interested in reading poetry.
Exactly,
or,
yeah.
Or you're a writer.
Yeah.
So this breathes life into them. So this continues living. So it keeps the poets alive, and it keeps the poems alive. And now you put music into it, and... You know, hopefully people will sing it.
And I think that's the most important key, is that you're taking the art route, because that's the most appealing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's the most transcending one. Like, take anything and apply it into a story form, a visual form, a musical form, an auditory form. It's like, that is the most easily digestible thing. And those are the methods that have been most successful throughout history, mm-hmm. you know. So,
it's the oral tradition.
Yeah. Oral. It's good.
That's good.
Yeah. But you're saying, like, the language is being used less. I don't know. For you, you're in Germany. Like, the language is almost inexistent where yeah. you are, right?
Yes.
So, you have a daughter, right?
I have a daughter, yeah.
Is she learning Armenian?
Yeah. I've been to Armenia now in the summer, and I realized how important it is for her identity, and I missed, because her mother is German, she's raised in a German environment, she's going to school and she just speaks German, so I missed it a bit to teach her the language, although I always showed her my Armenian songs, and I gave her the awareness that she's Armenian, and her father's Armenian, and I'm dark. There's a reason for me to be dark. Yeah. You know, kids go after colors. Yeah. Why, Papa? Why do you have just one eyebrow?
Why do you gotta go there?
Yeah. I wanted to ask you, because you had mentioned that obviously you were born in Frankfurt,
yeah,
and being Armenian, you were kind of like an outlier because you weren't exposed to other Armenians, like you said,
not even there. It's not existing country.
Yeah, it's like very. Yeah, it's very.
You go somewhere and everyone is asking, "Where are you from?" And then you're answering, "Is I'm Armenian, Armenia." So they don't even know.
Yeah.
Like 20 years ago, yeah. No one knew where Armenia is, because it was also part of the Soviet.
I wanted to ask you that, because how would you compare your experience 20 years ago? Because you were born there,
yeah,
and you saw people just being oblivious to where Armenia was,
yeah,
to the situation now, especially in German,
yeah,
in Germany, I'm sorry, with this hysteria, right?
Yeah,
against immigrants, you know, against people, yeah, of who are obviously not seemingly white, like the majority of the German population. Like, how do you see the country now, like the city you're from, being Armenian and German, like German Armenian?
How do I see the country now? I think Germany is very tolerant with foreigners, and especially with the 5 million Turkish people who are living there. They're very tolerant, and they try to give them the freedom to do whatever they wanted to. And that's the reason I didn't have problems in being raised in Germany. The only thing which was a problem for me is not having soulmates, not having an Armenian environment.
Yeah.
And That was the main thing. See, that's it didn't change, man.
But even here, where you have a very large diaspora, the parents, in order to make their children successful, put a lot of weight on assimilation, right? So then I wouldn't emphasize speaking the language. That's why, like, you know, Ara is saying, hey, like, the language is being used less and less. So if I'm a parent, it's like, oh, I remember growing up and having an accent and everyone, you know, being weirded out by my name and, you know, saying, like, where are you from? Because you had an accent when you were speaking. So, oh, I want my child to speak English properly. So I'm going to emphasize that over the other. Like, is that prevalent in your case now, like growing up, raising, you know, a daughter, like, or, I mean, or if you remember that being present as well, because I'm sure your parents were speaking Armenian to you, but then you're like, shit, like, I want to fit in, right? Like, I want to be...
Yeah, but that's,
like,
our culture. The Armenians, they always want to try to fit in.
Everyone wants to fit in. It's not...
No. That's 5 million Turkish in Germany, yeah, they don't want to fit in. They don't want to fit in. They're keeping their identity, and when Erdogan... he comes there and sports arenas are full of like 12,000 Turkish people listening to their hero, their president. And he says assimilation is genocide.
Oh, man.
For him, it's genocide. I mean,
he should know
he should not be using that word.
But for him, it is genocide. Yeah. So he tries to tell his folks, guys, be in Germany, speak your language, don't assimilate, earn your money, and make the Turkish power in Germany even more powerful.
Yeah, I mean, he has a lot of power because I think I read a story about how he made, like, the German political establishment persecute a German journalist for making fun of him.
Yeah.
That's ridiculous.
It's ridiculous. And that's what I mean. And it's very radical. He's an autocrat. It's a very... dangerous momentum right now in Europe and for Germany also, because there's so many of Erdogan's followers living in Germany.
I want to simplify that notion.
And
right?
Just to come back to the assimilation. We Armenians, wherever we are, we try to be successful. So we try to learn the language and try to assimilate as much as possible to be... to respect the culture and to be successful in that country, study, understand the language, and succeed. And Turkish people, they don't want that, you know, and they don't pass it to their parents. There are always exceptions, but I'm talking about the majority.
Yeah. See, that's what I was going to point out. It's like I perceive it in a sense where I'm going to someone's house as a guest, right? And I want to be respectful. If I'm used to, you know, eating with my hands, but the house I'm going to is using chopsticks or a fork, I'm going to, you know, be respectful and do what they're doing.
Yeah.
Right? So I can't go into someone's house and start pretending to be like, oh, man, I'm going to be stubborn because this is the way I do it and fuck you. You know, like, it has to be, I'm all for keeping your culture, your traditions, and your language, but it has to be a mutual kind of respect of, hey, I'm letting you into my house, respect me, I'll respect you, and it goes on from there. It's not like a, hey, we're going to die if I assimilate it, we're going to die out if, you know, I'm respectful to your wishes and your way of doing things in your culture.
Yeah, that's the reason why I appreciate Los Angeles so much, because you have an education system which provides the language. You have the possibility to meet more Armenians, and maybe you will meet the woman of your life or the girl of your life to marry. This is something which is very rare in Germany, because you don't have many Armenians. And so we assimilate. And most of the time we marry a German or a non-Armenian. And our next generation, the genocide continues in that way, because we're spread all over. We're not many. That's the reason for me. Los Angeles is an island.
But I feel like that works in the opposite way as well, in the extreme where you protect from assimilation. You, like, people come here and you just stick with your group, and your language and you don't assimilate, you don't move on or succeed, you don't adapt and learn the language. And there are individuals who are only staying in those smaller bubbles, even within a large city like Los Angeles, and they're just sheltered. And you're growing up sheltered with this closed, you know, cloak over your way of perceiving the world, as far as beside, you know, like instead of opening up and seeing different ways of doing things. Like, hold on to your culture and your traditions and your languages and everything, but also expose yourself to every other culture and language.
But that's what you tradition. Do, no?
Yeah, of course that's what I do, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. You're all doing that, yeah.
Yeah, but that's the positive way, because at that point, you can notice, it's like you learn and unlearn. When you want to see things and you know the way to do things, you know, based on the way you grew up. But it's also important to self-reflect and see, okay, this way of thinking is negative and not okay.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a filtering process of taking bits and bits of information from all cultures and applying them to yourself, or different subjects and applying them to yourself, and, you know, evolving like throughout time. And not being so stubborn and adamant about just doing things, you know, your way.
Are you trying to run? Are you trying to run for president, man? None of you. I mean, we have I mean, we're all immigrants, you know. I think one way or another, like one from Germany, one Armenian, Mexican. I mean, Ada. I mean, he's very young, but he's a little bit older than us. How would you describe your experience growing up in LA as an Armenian, a little bit older, obviously, than us, but how do you see those changes and that drive perhaps to maintain your identity, but at the same time be able to succeed in the society that you're living in? In this case, the American and Californian one.
Well, as far as, like, you guys were talking about assimilation, I see myself as, you know, one of those people that assimilated to a certain point where, you know, you're functional in the society. And adapt the ways where you're living, and you must, whether it's the language and or behaviors and in society, but at the same time not lose your ethnicity and your culture that way. So I think it's possible, and we're proof of that. To answer your question directly, how, you know, there was a time here that when we first immigrated where it was very difficult. Maybe not as difficult as Frankfurt or Germany, where Aaron's from, but it was pretty damn difficult. Growing up in high school here, nobody knew. There weren't that many Armenians.
What high school did you go to?
Reseda.
Yeah.
Nice, proper school. really kind kids.
Yeah. But yeah.
They were very, very nice and very welcoming, an immigrant kid.
So how old were you? Or you came when you even
I was 14.
You're 14,
but that was Philadelphia.
But one question: when you went to high school, did you have Armenian classes?
No, you went to public school, man.
Are you kidding? No. Hold on. Let me repeat what I said. In my school, when I went to Reseda, there were maybe three or four Armenians.
But
no class. To answer your question, there's no way there. There isn't even a class now. There are no Armenian classes there.
Okay, but there were schools providing the Armenian language. You could
Armenian schools.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Where you had to pay a lot of money.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay. So, I'm not comparing. Don't worry. This is not a contest. I'm not comparing myself to where you live. However, what I'm saying is, like, we immigrated to Philadelphia first, and then came to LA. But
that was a good move.
Yeah, it was. Philadelphia was horrible, actually. There were five Armenians there, I think, and they used to fight who was more American. And they'd only been here like 2 years, 3 years. and they'd keep fighting every time they got together. And one of them said one time, "Did your mother come on the Mayflower, man?"
I'm that American.
My family was tea baggers.
So, yeah. So, but anyway, back to Reseda and all that. It was tough.
Yeah.
I hated my high school days. We were in a fight every day. And back then it was the...
Who'd you hang out with?
Cholos, man.
Really?
What is Cholos? What is
Mexicans. Mexicans.
Cholos.
No, no, no. But Cholos.
Cellos.
No, Cholos.
Cello.
Cello.
Oh, no wonder you're a musician. Yeah.
That's where you found your musical passion.
No, but Cholos are like, like gangsters, you know? Like
actually, yeah. No, I didn't hang out with anybody. I was like, you know, I hung out with my guitar under a tree. Literally, and then found a couple of friends. Found a, and I mean, actually,
that's so cute.
Yeah. They didn't think so.
Yeah.
Well, actually, they did. They started picking a fight with me.
Were you successful with ladies because you were just hanging out with your guitar?
No, I sucked at it. Not at school. It was horrible. I was, you know, I was an outcast. But it took a while. Then senior year was better because I found myself in the music department and like. Marching band. So I took a jazz band class and you couldn't be in the jazz band without being in a marching band, but there's, you know, I don't play woodwind. So they didn't know what to do with me. So they gave me the cymbals, those huge cymbals. So I was a cymbal guy in the marching band. But
after cymbal you went to the element part.
Right. Then I picked up the guitar.
You know, like, you're talking about your high school experience and how, like, it's such a clash, and I can't imagine. But I experienced, like, a similar thing, too, because I transitioned from a private Armenian school where you're completely sheltered and you're, you know, only a handful of kids and everyone knows everyone. Your parents were classmates and friends with your teachers. Your teachers are, like, allowed to hit you if they want, you know? And then you leave that environment and you're thrown into a public school, you know. And at least I had my twins.
Where they're not allowed to hit you.
No. But I remember my first day of public school at Ness 11. It was my sister and I, fifth grade. We go into this class and it was this big, fat, black woman as our teacher who like threw this other kid down and like sat on him. And all the other kids were like eating popcorn and like chewing as if it was like a wrestling fight. I was like, what the fuck is going on? And all the kids are corrupt, you know, everyone's doing crazy shit that was never like you would never be exposed to. And
I don't know what elementary
school.
You went to, man.
Yeah, man.
I never had that experience. And I mean, I went to a public school. Here in the US, I've always
so strange.
Gone to public schools.
Listen, it's,
but I mean, like, how do you, okay, so you had this experience. In the 90s, like 80s.
Okay.
Yeah, you're young. I'm just promoting your
youth.
How do you see, for example, when you see your nephews and your nieces, like do you see, like, how do you see the new Armenian American generations growing up?
Times have changed quite a bit back then. Like, you know, like not as extreme as what Aryan went through, but ours was. Still, you didn't have Armenians around. It wasn't like this at all. It wasn't like this at all. So you did have to explain who you were and whatnot. And right now, especially in LA County, everybody knows what an Armenian is.
Yeah.
As a matter of fact, a lot of people will say Parev to you and go, hey, Parev.
Yeah.
So people even know a word or two. That's crazy for me to think about, you know, when we couldn't have imagined that. We couldn't, not at all. We didn't imagine that we'd get to a point.
You know why?
Tell me.
Zonku chicken.
Who's
<what happened>. Now sponsoring the podcast?
That's right.
Yeah. The garlic sauce, right. Man.
Yeah, what are you getting, like a tab on the side to like promote that? Yeah. I've never heard you say the word Zonku chicken before, man.
What do you mean?
They're having a special this week.
It's like, we're wearing the t-shirt right now.
So, yeah. So, how do I see them? They're in a better place. We're in a better place.
Yeah.
You know, when I, you know, I'm partners with LA County Arts for the Ford Amphitheater shows. So when I, you know, they're very much they encourage cross culture promotion, and now, you know, whenever I write, you know, the Armenian culture, this and that, everyone knows what I'm talking about.
Yeah,
I
don't have to sit there and explain. Yeah. Yeah,
so that's we've progressed quite a bit. So, and you know, obviously, there's a lot of political stuff involved in it, but aside from that, because I'm not involved in the political end, from an performing arts perspective. So being able to serve up the Armenian culture to the community, when I go and promote that, they're very much they very much want to listen. They want to learn more. So it's very much a positive thing. Even again, getting back to what Aryan and I are doing, this is something that we can promote. This is something that they're interested in these days, where 30 years ago, they would not throw us out, but they wouldn't even take the phone call.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's in a form that's easily digestible and transferable. Cool. Well, power on. Struggle continues. All right, guys, thank you so much. Let's wrap it up on that note. Okay, so once again, the show album release concert is August 28th at Barnsdall Theater.
7 p.m.
7 p.m. And then website, how can they get in touch with getting the album? Is it hard copy, iTunes, all that?
Best thing is it's going to go on iTunes. We haven't released it in Germany yet, but it is going to go on iTunes, hopefully within the next couple weeks. But right now it'll be available through cdrama.com. And our Facebook page is the best way to reach us, Emirsyan and
Darbanjan. So it's difficult to spell. We'll put a link on it. E M I R S I A N D A B A
N
J I A N J I D J I A N.
The good thing about the name is everyone knows.
I forget how to spell my last name.
We're Armenian.
Yeah,
that's very nice.
Well, we'll put a link. It'll be easier than to remember it. All right, cool. Catch you guys next time. Much love.
Thank you.
Thank you.